Hi, I'm Rachel, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 28, 2017. I have a home group, and it's the Outlaw Safe Crackers group, and it, we meet Monday and Thursdays in Richmond, and I'm a sponsor and have a sponsor. I was thinking about today, just kind of, I guess anytime I'm asked to speak, I start to think about, you know, how to even start this, like, but I think when I think about, I was just with my family recently, and just a lot of things kind of come to mind with them when I'm with them, and I kind of grew up at a young age just knowing that, like, I was eventually going to drink. Like, that was just kind of, that was what life was going to hold for me. I mean, like, because my family, there's a lot of drinking, and there's, like, a lot of drug abuse, and so that's just what I saw, and so it's what I assumed that was normal. And I don't know, not that that makes someone an alcoholic, but, like, I mean, this is kind of the beginning of my relationship with alcohol. It would be years before I would drink, but just at a young age, even just being interested in wanting a sip to try things, and it was just kind of on my mind. But at the same time, on the flip side of that, like, being around all that drinking and whatnot, like, I had, at a young age, I started all these resentments towards my parents, especially my dad, and I just grew up always thinking, I'm never going to be like that. I'm never going to drink like that, and that's not going to be me, and I can't wait to, not that I can't wait to have kids, but, like, I can't wait to have a family to not do what they're doing, and yeah, I think that, I mean, that kind of shaped a lot for me, and I was willing to do anything that my dad wouldn't do, and it's just kind of a weird dichotomy in my mind where I just, like, I'm not going to drink, but I'm also, I know I'm eventually going to do it. So, I go through, I guess in fifth grade, at my school, they did DARE, the drug and alcohol thing. I don't even know if the other two or the R and E are, but, I remember doing it, and they had everyone sign a pledge and to, you know, we're not going to do this. And I didn't sign it because I just knew that, like, was, like, kind of ludicrous, even in the fifth grade. And, like, I don't know. So that, I mean, at that point, I hadn't even had a drink yet. But, I don't know, fast forward, I ended up moving in high school. And for me, I kind of grew up following the rules. I was really afraid. So much of my life I just have lived in fear, like paralyzing fear, to the point where I can't even, like, speak to people. Being in classes and, like, just being really intimidated. And I moved, and it was in this time of, I don't know, any teenager's life where, like, a lot's changing, and, like, I kind of reinvented myself when I moved. And I moved, and my dad didn't come with us, and so, I don't know, I started over, and I just kind of gravitated towards some of the people that drank, and I guess I was probably 15, and I don't remember my first drink. I don't remember at any point, like, some light just turned on. It was just kind of like I started, and I didn't really stop for a long time. My drinking never was one or two drinks. It was always to get drunk. Like, it was never a question. I didn't really think there was any other way to drink. And I think maybe part of that is also just, like, the culture of being a teenager and being young. But it was never, and throwing up was just kind of like, okay, it happens. Like, it's a little embarrassing that you're the person who did, but I was never like, oh, I'm never going to do this again. It was always just like, all right, so next weekend we're on. And I don't know, I never, didn't really become a daily thing or in the morning or anything for a while, but in high school, I got by. Like I said, I mean, a lot of how I acted in high school is a lot of fear-based. actions, I guess, that is really motivated by fear. It took years for me to be able to, like, name that. So things, like I said, it just be paralyzed. And I will say, but drinking, what it did for me was I was able to, it just brought down a lot of those walls that I had before. So I was able to talk with people and, like, there's nothing between you and me anymore. I don't care about what you, I still care about what you think, but I think I'm powerful enough to, like, I can make this relationship however I want. I can manipulate it however I want. And I don't, it just gave me a lot, drinking did. And, like, it was, like I said, it was just kind of all the time in high school. And eventually, towards the end of high school, it started to catch up with me a little bit, the amount I was drinking and the amount I was willing to give up to drink. And just, I was doing a lot of things that I never thought I would do. Like, I was starting to become someone I never thought I would be. I was starting to be that girl I didn't want to be, that girl I judged all the time and did for a long time. And I was in denial for a lot of it. And I was pretty sick of myself even by the end of high school. I had minor consequences relationally, but also I had been caught by the cops a couple of times but never really arrested. And my parents had to pick me up, and it was just kind of bizarre. My family, I got caught a couple of times, and they would ask me, "What'd you blow?" And then I went to bed, and we never talked about it again. That's just the culture of my family. And drinking is just, I think my parents drank in high school, they admitted to it, and it was just kind of like, all right. The first time I got caught definitely they would just be like, okay, be safe. And that was just kind of what happened. And so it wasn't like a, all right, go ahead and go and drink as much as you want, but it was just kind of a, in the sense, like, I had nothing really stopping me. But yes, towards the end of high school, I am pretty sick of myself. I'm just, I'm in places I don't want to be, with people I don't want to be. I'm already starting to really kind of hate who I am, the things I'm doing. And waking up in places I don't even know. I'm, like, sneaking out, and my parents don't realize I'm gone, and it's not really a big deal. And, I don't know. So when I graduated, prom was a senior year, was bad. And I just figured after this, like, I'm going to graduate with these people and never talk to them again. And that's kind of what I did. And I thought, I'm going to spend the whole entire summer by myself, alone, because I can't keep doing this. And I did that. I was pretty lonely, but I, like, so a lot of my drinking is, whenever I stopped drinking, I kind of developed an eating disorder. And so that was my summer of just hanging out by myself. And after my senior, this summer of alone, of being alone, and I'm going into college, and I'm thinking, I'm gonna have some good friends. Like, I had to have this deliberate thinking, like, I cannot surround myself with these people anymore. And at some point in high school, I was introduced to the idea of God and having a relationship with God, and something inside me, I felt the presence of God for the first time in high school this organization that I was kind of a part of, and so that stuck with me for a while. And, going into college, I thought, maybe these are the people I need to, like, be around and meet and, like, living a different life. And, so I tried. And, the people I met are still some of my good friends today, but they had to deal with me for a while. I just needed to figure myself out and get stuff together. So college, I didn't drink for that summer. I didn't drink for the first year, and I was really hard to be around. I had an opinion about everything, and I needed to, like, things be my way. I was just really a lot of pent-up anger and frustration, just a lot of emotions I had just stuffed down for a long time or just kind of at the surface. And, had good friends, but looking back at just who I was, it was pretty miserable to be around. But I couldn't take it anymore. I met up with some friends from high school I knew who had alcohol, and I started drinking again in college, and things went downhill from there. I mean, I became a daily drinker starting in college, and I think it was maybe my junior year, I studied abroad, and that kind of accelerated things. And I go to Europe, I don't know, there's just a whole different drinking culture there. And so I just felt like I could get away with a lot more. And all that, like, I have these friends I'm living with that I made my freshman year that are just, like, these great people living really principled lives. And I'm just trying to live two lives, essentially. Like, I would lie and get and just kind of and drink and live the life I was living in high school, just doing things I just didn't want to be doing. But it's just kind of like when I drink, I don't know what's going to happen after I start drinking. And for the longest time, I mean, I could not have put words to it that I was an alcoholic, but I knew that how I drank was different than everyone else. And, like, I knew it because my entire life I told myself I was never going to be like that. And so deep down I kind of knew what was going on, but I was nowhere near admitting it. I just knew, like, what was going on was a little different. And I was like, in my mind, like, it's okay, like, because my parents have made this work for so long. I mean, they are very functional people, really. Great, they're nice and, like, do good things, but my dad drinks like a fish, and he can't, I mean, he becomes pretty unbearable, but I just figured that was, you know, how it was, that was a pretty normal progression of life. But so I managed to get through college, and I have no plans. And for some reason, I changed my major in college to an easier one, and just so I can get by. So I thought, oh, this would be more interesting than, like, studying something hard. And so I think that's how I managed to get through college, because it's not that I do things that are, I give up if I don't feel like I'm going to be good enough. And so that was a lot of my life. That was part of a lot of the fear that I had. So, like, sold myself short a lot. And so, like I said, I mean, a lot of my friends had goals and ambitions, and I just didn't. I didn't know what I wanted to be, what I wanted to do, because I spent so much of my life trying to not think about what I want, who I am, or just face the reality of myself. And so I moved to Richmond with a couple other girls who didn't know what they were doing, and it was great because, yes, we none of us had jobs, and we signed a lease, and because, you know, whatever, like, of course I'm gonna get a job. And we all get really bad jobs, like, did not get paid a lot. I don't even know how. I wish I could understand my budgeting, because I mean, all I did was drink. All I did. I did not make it to work on time hardly ever. I had the stomach bug a lot. And, I think that's when some differences started to show to me a lot more, because I was no longer in this college atmosphere where drinking, you know, I mean, it's just so confusing. Everyone's drinking, and it's just crazy sometimes. But these two girls, you know, I, like I said, I was drinking daily and it was just kind of normal to me. And I, as soon as I got home, I just needed, a drink. And they didn't. I don't know. And so, but we would drink often. So I thought, oh, we all drink though. Like we all drink a fair amount and we're all just like young and single and had nothing to do with our, like all of a sudden, you know, when you graduate, I don't know if you graduate college and you just have a lot of time. And so what I, all we did was drink. And our one friend, one of our roommates had, well, she had a nanny job. So she was going on all these interviews. And so anytime she got like an interview or anything like that, we'd celebrate. So it was just a reason to go out and drink. And, I mean, I just remember this one time, it was just, we were just literally celebrating the fact that someone like called her for a phone interview. It was like not even like a real interview. And we, it was a, but it was that, I don't know, this night stands out to me so much because I drank so much that I mean, I was throwing up through the next day and, I can't make it to work, but I'm like, in my mind, I'm always like, I'm going to go to work eventually. Like, I always have this, like, I always make myself like go and get up and do what I need to do. And, I always managed to make it work. And so this night or this morning just took me a lot longer than normal. And I, at one point I had these like anti-nausea pills from having actually the stomach bug at some point, like a legit one. And, they were also, they also made you really drowsy. And so it kind of, so I couldn't stop throwing up. So I like took one or plus more, I don't know, of those, and I drove to work. I hit a handful of cars. And especially as I was pulling into work, so it's in the city of Richmond, so I had to parallel park. And my coworker, no one's outside but my coworker on her phone. And I pull up and I just sideswipe this car and just take a lot of damage. And she's like, just keep driving. And I just pulled up two spaces and parked. She's like, just go home. Like, you gotta go. And in my mind, I'm like, no, I'm going to work. Cause I'm fine. And I'm not fine. I mean, I'm like so out of it. And I mean, all we do is we go and just put the light back in the car and we walk away. And I don't know. So that's an amends I've had to like figure out how to make in general, just cause I mean, living in the city, you just hit a lot of stuff. And I don't know. So yeah, whenever I drank and drove, I was in my mind, I was fine. You know, I was never, in my mind, I was never drinking and driving. I was just driving. I wasn't that bad off. Towards the end of my drinking, it changed a little bit, but the ironic thing about that story is that I walked into work, played off that I was just feeling poorly that morning, and then the cops come in because there's been a hit and run in our parking lot, and they come and talk to my boss about it, and they are blaming it on my boss, and he like has like somehow has video proof it wasn't him. I don't know. Anyway, it was never, nothing ever came out of it. So I just had a lot of, I don't know about luck per se, but like I just somehow got away with a lot. I never got arrested. Not that I shouldn't have been, plenty of times. But so going through my, I guess my early 20s, it was just kind of, that was a lot of my life. I don't know, stuff started catching up to me, and I would compensate with drinking. And what I mean by catching up with me is just like the reality of life. I just, in the reality of kind of who I am, and especially what I would say, like, the depravity of just our, the reality of being human. I mean, I just, a lot that I had just never confronted or faced growing up, and also just kind of the, not only the environment I grew up in, but also just the consequences of the choices I made, I just had never dealt with. And a lot of my friends started, like, doing things with their lives, and I don't know, it seemed like they were always going places with people, and I started, my life getting started getting really, really small, and I got pretty, I mean, very, very depressed, and to the point where, again, I just, like, stopped eating, and I, so this form of depression was just so debilitating, I couldn't, it was just really hard to, the idea of moving sometimes was too painful, and I eventually stopped drinking because I started cutting a lot out of my life. I started getting, like, really paranoid. I don't know if it's exactly what happened, but it was, I was afraid to watch TV. I was afraid to read certain books. I mean, just really, like, paranoia started setting in, and lost a lot of weight, weighed about 100 pounds. And I was proud of myself for not, for being able to stop drinking. And it, because I was like, I really can do it. Like, I can stop on my own. Like, and I felt powerful about it. And eventually what would happen is I'd end up an IOP for an eating disorder. And I just eventually kind of, like, gained some sanity, and what it felt like, and had some bearings on life. And I got through that, and I felt like, I think I'm gonna drink again. Like, this is, I think I'm ready. Like, and it was like a big thought process and a big ordeal. Like, that I had this, like, underlying fear, even though I thought I had so much power over it, and in reality it had zero power, and it more so had power over me. And but I had this underlying fear of I don't know what's gonna happen, because I mean, my life has never looked good when I started drinking again. I remember I was up in Canada, because at this point I had started doing, I run a lot and do some, like, endurance stuff, and so I traveled up there for something, and I don't know, that's been really helpful, but, you know, it didn't get me sober, but I was up in Canada, and I was with these two other women. I was like, this is safe, right? Where, you know, not a lot of people around. I mean, I don't know how much damage can be done. And so I took one glass, or I had a glass of wine, and then the next thing you know, it's like back where I left off. I mean, two bottles of wine, and like, and the only thing that stopped me was, like, I had done an insane race that morning, and so I was so wiped out, and that was, you know, the beginning of the end, essentially, for me. The next maybe 9+ months, when they say it's, like, progressive, it's so true, because, like I said, whenever I started back up, I started right where I left off, and I just went downhill really quick. I ended up going back to school, and it made it very difficult with drinking. And I eventually had to, like, come clean and it was a big ordeal. But I get back to daily drinking. I fail some classes. Because that's, you know, all I can do is drink now, and I'm living alone, which is just setting me up for failure, I think, and of no one really keeping me accountable. People don't see me for a few days, you know, not abnormal. But I really started to isolate more than ever. I lived two blocks from a liquor store, but I couldn't walk that far. I could walk physically, but just the idea of walking, having to walk, which is 5 minutes longer than a car ride, so I had to drive. Because I just couldn't wait that long to drink. I don't know. That's still true for that's just how lazy I am now. It's go and get food. I'd drive two blocks. But with alcohol, it was just it was just almost my skin would crawl. I would just get this itch, I just needed it. And it would, and my day, how much of it was consumed with drinking versus not drinking was, that was, changing. It would get earlier and earlier in the day that I would start. And I would always tell myself in the morning, I would just feel a whole new person. I'm not going to do it today. I can do it. I can get by. And I mean, that wasn't true. It was just something just turned on in me. At some point in the early, the earlier it got, later in my drinking, but it was just really consuming. And a lot of my relationships, throughout my drinking did suffer a little bit. They did. Not a little bit. A lot happened. A lot of amends. But I would be with friends, and I would realize the liquor store is going to close, and I would just leave, just because I would just get so anxious that I wouldn't be able to get any. Or just showing up at 7-Eleven at 12 o'clock, and they wouldn't serve me beer. They wouldn't let me buy anything, and just the idea of not having a drink was really unsettling, or even having one and not being able to keep drinking was literally just my skin would crawl. And so it becomes so consuming. A couple friends are starting to get a little concerned, and I am a little concerned. I know what's going on. I'm not oblivious, and I'm pretty miserable. And I'm starting to, consequences of school, I just can't get it together. I have people, I'm able to show up, but it's not pretty. And I have people asking, are you okay? I'm I look like any other, I'm fine. Everyone looks like this. No. And I was commuting up to Charlottesville from Richmond for school, and a lot of drinking on 64. That's why driving, I just don't like that stretch of 64 anymore. It's just a lot of emotions were felt in that car. It's just a lot of driving. A lot of alone time with myself, and I don't know. I just couldn't make it through the day without drinking, so it's, definitely not the best decision to be driving, but just couldn't not drink. Towards the end of my drinking, I try and stop again, and I can't. I don't really have the power that I thought I had, like I did the last time I started to stop drinking. So I would do things, I would try and I would stay at people's houses. There's one woman I trusted a lot, and she just let me sleep on her couch and not let me leave. And I couldn't just live with someone like that. They couldn't just be my babysitter. So I had to, eventually I did that enough where people would start being you need to see somebody, you need something, this isn't working. And I had people suggest AA, and I just never thought that was my reality, I knew about AA through, movies and stuff, and It was beyond me. But eventually, my friend was like, can I reach out to my friend that's in AA? And I said, I'll think about it. And eventually, I did come around, and I think what happened is that she reached out to her without me giving permission. But she told me that she gave my number to somebody, and so a woman called me, and I kind of knew to expect a call from an 804 number, and so I knew not to pick up, is what happened. And said, I don't know, I mean, she would eventually become my sponsor, but it was a long road to get there. But there's a few more phone calls and messages where I at least decided to meet up with coffee, to get coffee with her. And a lot of coffee was like, if I don't want to talk about myself, I'll just ask you a ton of questions and you just talk. And that was safe to me. And I've since gotten a lot better about that. But because what my drinking was like, the reason I was kind of willing to meet with her is, like I said, I couldn't stop on my own, but I was also doing things like I said, but my driving did start to scare me a little bit. Like, I would wake up and look at my car and just hope there's no dents, and I would be terrified to turn on the news. I'd be terrified to, did I kill someone last night? I just had no idea. And I was just waking up and like I just like couldn't remember what, I think things just got scarier. I would wake up and vomit a lot and just like be kind of coughing it up. I just wake up and like in these states, and like I just like, I, you know, next time might be the last time, I don't know. And just like thought, I mean, things were actually scaring me a little bit. And so, you know, I met up with this woman and I went to a meeting, and I actually do remember my first meeting. A lot of people, I feel like, don't, but I remember like little bits, because it was someone up there that was my age, and that was really bizarre. It was a speaker meeting. And I remember like little things that he would say that I was like, oh, like I don't know, just things like popped out to me that I just thought were really unique to me. And I mean, that wasn't like enough for me to come back. It was just kind of like enough to just stir something up inside me. So it'd be a few more months before I would get really sober. I would kind of come around here or there, and I would ask this woman to be my sponsor, even though I wasn't really ready. And I would drink, and I would kind of come to a meeting or two, and I would drink, and I just didn't think, I don't know, I didn't think AA was for, I didn't think it would work. I mean, I had no idea that, even though I had gone to several meetings, I had no idea there were steps involved, and or work. You know, I just thought that you'd show up and you go home and somehow magic happened. I don't know, who knows? I don't know what I was thinking at that time. And you know, eventually things just kind of, again, like, just pretty sick of myself. My last time I drank, I'm in school, and so it's my last semester, and somehow I've made it by. I have had to tell my, I had a conversation with a professor about, like, you need to either go on medical leave or you know, student leave of absence, or you need to withdraw. I mean, there's just no way. And so, I mean, conversations like that were happening. And I think I wanted to make it work. Like, my whole life has just been like, I'm going to make it work. And I, you know, I was able to kind of muscle through a lot, but this time I definitely wasn't going to be able to. And the last time I drank, it was a test online, and it was due at, like, I don't know, some random time of the day, and I was up drinking at, like, by myself at, like, 3 a.m. trying to take this test, and I got a 12%, and I fell asleep woke back up and realized what I was doing, kept drinking throughout the, I don't know what was magical about that one, this one instance, but I just was pretty done. And I went to a meeting, picked up finally my last white chip. I'd picked up several. And it didn't really get easy right away. I mean, nothing, I didn't get a lot of reprieve immediately. So I went to meetings almost every day. I wasn't going to school as much as I should have been, but I mean, I was going to meetings like twice a day, and I think that's really what helped me, which is, even though I wasn't really actively working a lot of the steps or going through the book quite yet, I mean, just being around you guys and, you know, having somewhere to be was really crucial, because I would sit outside my apartment in my car because I'd be afraid to go in because I wouldn't know what to do with myself. I'd call my sponsor and, like, and for the first time I started, she had me call other people and other people calling me, and that was a game changer, because I was always, so much of my life was like, I'm going to keep you this far away. Like, I was just so afraid of people knowing me, and lying was just so natural. But I think I was so worn down and broken, that I had people calling me, and I would actually tell them what was going on. And I think that's when things started to change, was me being willing to be as honest as I was and as honest as I could be. And so I start moving through the steps, and I feel a little reprieve. I think these people call it like the pink cloud in the beginning, when things start to like click a little, and I have like friends that actually care. Like, I've always had friends that are like really great people, but people that I've been the most honest with, which was not that honest, but like, you know, things started happening. And then I got to my fourth step, and something I'll say about my first three steps is, you know, I had mentioned kind of having started a relationship with God earlier in my life in high school, and it was something I would try and cater to, and I don't know. It was in the background a lot of my life, but it wasn't fully, you know, it wasn't on the front burner. You know, it wasn't priority, and you know, I was priority in what I wanted and how I wanted to feel. But so the first three steps, my sponsor made me, even though I kind of thought I had this great relationship with God, I didn't, and I just needed, I think, taking my time through the first three steps were really important, because otherwise, like, moving through the rest of them would have been pointless. And so, I don't know. I mean, I remember specifically I was on my second step, and I was just at a stoplight, and it hit me, you know. I would just journal on, like, receipts. Like, it just because I was just, like, things were starting to shift a little. And I think what my sponsor says and what I've heard is, like, you know, you get into the ruins and you get a little reprieve. And what really was happening is, like, a little bit of light is making its way in to you. And, I don't know, things started to shift a little. I started to change, and nothing earth-shattering at all. But my life was definitely, I was definitely feeling more secure than I ever had felt, which was, you know, not great, not immensely secure. But so I get to my fourth step, and this is like the most feared step for me. It was for the longest time. I would sit in meetings, and I would, people would talk about it and be like, no way in hell am I going to write down all this stuff. Like, I don't know why. The thought of, like, you know, making amends, I'm like, whatever, I can say sorry. Because what I would, in my mind, like, saying sorry was just, like, I would have control over the situation, when in reality you're not supposed to. But the fourth step was scary. I took my time with it, and started to get miserable, I took several months to do it, maybe even 6 months, just because I would just tell people that I'm just really busy, it's really exhausting. And I mean, yeah, I can only sit down and do it a little bit at a time. Like, I did have a small capacity. Some people somehow can, I don't know, 2 hours. It took me, like, I think probably close to 10 hours or something crazy, but over the course of 6 months. And I get to do my fifth step, and it is a lot easier than I thought it would be. You know, my sponsor is so gracious, and she would, just listen to me with full attention, and she would be honest, and she had been very honest about her story and things she had done, and she made it, even though I really was intimidated and scared to do it, she helped me a lot. She took down a lot of barriers that were there. And, you know, once I got through that, I felt like, oh my God, I finally did it. Like, people talk about, like, doing different steps and, like, yeah, whatever, and feeling like they're finally a part of AA. And that was the fourth and fifth step for me. I never thought I would get there or be willing or have the capacity to even do it. And part of that was, like, I just don't want anybody to know me. And part of me is still kind of like that. I think I've been living like that for a very long time, so it's going to take a while to really unlearn it. But, the thing about the last several steps is once I kind of started to understand what the ninth step was about, I, you know, of course, cultivated a lot of fear over that. And I took my time to really get started, and I later after I finished steps is when I would really do a bulk of mine. But what I was really nervous about was the final. I mean, I was nervous to make amends, but I was also just really nervous to be in a position to help other people because I just didn't want to. I wanted to make myself feel better, and I just wanted to show up and leave. I just wanted to talk to people I wanted to talk to, that I felt comfortable talking to, and go home and not have to think about reaching out to somebody or I just did not want to do it. I did not want to help people. I had done some, like, outreach work earlier, in part of college, and it was exhausting work because I was doing it all on, like, my own volition, and, like, I didn't understand why these, like, high school girls weren't getting it. Like, why couldn't they, like, just, like, trying to will someone to change is just, I don't know, it's insanity is what it is. And so I just knew, so I had done that kind of, like, service work in my life before, and I just thought this is going to be the death of me. It feels so miserable to try and help people on, like, your own terms, and, like, and I just really didn't want to do it again. And a lot of that was, you know, fear, but a lot of it was, like, selfishness. All of it selfish and self-seeking, but what would happen was by the time I ended up getting to the 12th step, something inside me had changed, like, and I was shocked. Like, I didn't realize it right away, but whenever I was willing to help somebody and not, eventually I would get to the point where I just wouldn't think, but I would reach out to someone. I would be put in positions where I was the only woman, so I would have, you know, I would be reaching out to the only other female there, and, like, it wasn't even a question. Like, I just started doing these things, and one day I just kind of realized, oh, like, I'm doing it. Like, so much of AA and so much of this process is, I don't realize what has changed until far after it just happened. I mean, which is such a gift. Because if I realized in the moment, I'd probably sabotage it for sure. But, I mean, so much has changed. And so going back to the amends, after I would finish all the steps, you know, I had a lot of amends I had left undone because my sponsor's like, you can do, start off with some easy ones and then you can, and then we'll, you know, we'll move through the rest of the steps. I did like the easiest ones, like people who I had currently had relationships where I felt good enough where I like, I know this is going to go well. And they did, like little things like, you know, I'd lived with people and stolen little things and they're like, it doesn't matter. And to me, I mean, I had this one friend who I stole a lot of her peanut butter once, and, like, it had haunted me for years. Like, just stuff like that had just, so many of the steps, like, so much is weighing on me, like, ridiculous stuff, like peanut butter. And, like, that weighed on me more than the fact that maybe I hit somebody last night, you know? Just, like, it's really bizarre, like, the weight that my mind puts on things. But, I eventually realized I went through the ninth step. It was like I had been to like multiple meetings in a row talking about the ninth step, and I just felt this like essentially a calling, like you need to get this done. And part of me was really willing. I was, you know, because some of these things, my amends, like, were weighing on me, and one of the hardest amends to me, what I was so scared to do, was a friend from college, like, I just basically cut her out of my life, because just for a number of reasons, but really, I treated her pretty poorly, and so I was really nervous. And my heart was literally pounding. You know, you just, like, I literally felt it coming out of my chest is what it felt like. And she lived across the country, and my sponsor's like, you can at least start out with a phone call and see if she's willing to talk to you at least. And so I get her on the phone, and this girl doesn't even remember half of what I have to apologize or, like, make amends for. And it surprises, like, and since then we've, like, you know, a friendship's not going to, like, guaranteed, like, we're not going to be friends for life, but, like, we've, like, talked every once in a while since that amends. I mean, it's just, like, insane, like, that had been something that I would wake up in the middle of the night thinking about how poorly I had treated this girl, and it turns out she was doing just fine, you know, like, she didn't need me to do that, but it was what was important that, and so, with that, it's not just about my, like, mental health, but it's also about what is separating me from God, is what is really important with a lot of these amends and a lot of the step work. And a lot of what I do daily is, you know, what's keeping me from God. And if you ask, it, you know, will be revealed to you in time, trust me. And that's a lot of what it's looked like for me now is, you know, just being open to what God has, whereas before I just couldn't be patient enough. I would just make things happen, and I would take control over situations that didn't need my control. And it's been... being a sponsor has taught me a lot too, and it's only by the help of my own sponsors has helped me get through that. Having the willingness to help other people and how to do it well isn't easy, but it's interesting. Before I got here, I thought I didn't know what was gonna come out of my mouth because I've just been really distracted recently. I'm like, I haven't been a good AA. I haven't been a good, like, child of God, or, you know. And so, you know, I've been going to meetings, but I think I'm thankful that you asked me to come and speak. It's really, it helps in moments when I can definitely see myself straying a little bit, but it's, I'm really thankful. So thanks for letting me speak.